Trotter, the court will be joined by Judge Reedman and Judge Arterburn of the Court of Appeals. So, Mr. Davis, good morning to you. Let's give everybody a moment to get in and out of the courtroom. That has now occurred, so you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, ladies and gentlemen of the court, may it please the court. My name is James Martin Davis, and I'm the attorney for the defendant in this case, who was a 16-year-old individual that allegedly committed a crime in January 2015. As a result of a jury trial, he was convicted of two counts of first-degree murder and two counts of use of a firearm. Now, I've raised two issues in my brief. After wading through 17 volumes of this case, I think that both parties tried it very well. The judge tried it in excellent fashion, but there are two issues that jumped out at me, and those are my assignments of error. The first is that the trial court committed a reversible error by excluding relevant evidence offered by the defendant in support of his primary defense that he was not the shooter, and in sustaining the state's rule 403 objection without any showing of unfair prejudice. So basically what we're saying, they offered evidence to show that my client wasn't the shooter. It was relevant with respect to saying that it was some other individual. The second issue is in sentencing the defendant to consecutive terms of imprisonment, aggravating really the 90 to 140 years the trial court imposed the sentence that is functionally equivalent of life without the possibility of parole for a juvenile. That's in violation of the Eighth Amendment prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment. Now, I'm going to submit that second issue in the last year and have 2 years all the way up to, this will pass Wednesday. You heard enough about de facto life sentences for juveniles, so I'm going to concentrate on the one issue that we're talking about. I don't call attention to the court's attention to State versus Messersmith and State versus Lawmaker, and basically what it says, in a jury trial of a criminal case, you have held as a court whether an error in admitting or excluding evidence reaches a constitutional dimension or not. An erroneous evidential ruling results in prejudice to the defendant unless the state demonstrates that the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's basically what we're saying here. This case was based solely on eyewitnesses. And we're saying that that eyewitness testimony was faulty. There wasn't any DNA, there wasn't any fingerprints, there was no firearms, no admissions, no confessions, no jailhouse snitches, no incriminating evidence found on the defendant. So basically relied on the reliability of the testimony identification of these three witnesses. That's important because Trotter's defense in this case, his theory of defense, that it was a black male named DeAndre Hines who committed the crime, who was the shooter. Now, in the final argument, the state said that they are relying on three eyewitnesses. Well, I want to briefly talk about those eyewitnesses. The first was Garion Woods. Well, she was in court, and she was unable to identify my client. She also testified, and the evidence was, that she was unable to identify my client in photo lineup. She gave a description of the shooter, said he was light-skinned black male, flat nose, wearing a gray hoodie, that he was 5'7" to 5'8". My client was 5'11". And the gray hoodie was plain. There was no letters on it. There was no logos or whatever. But what's interesting is Garion Woods was present at the time of the shooting. Now, what happened is they found an ID, a photo ID, at the scene. And she saw this, and she told not to one person, but two persons, Officer Killaway. He says, this is the guy who did it. She identified that A.Q. Jones was the name of the guy. He was there. He was a friend of this DeAndre Hines. And then when she was in a car talking to Officer Moore, she says, I'm sure this is the guy who did it. So she did, and she gave a description different than fit my client, and she wasn't able to identify him at trial or in the photo lineup, but she identified somebody else. That's that's one of the ones that...
But your defense is not that it was somebody else. Your defense is it was Hines, right?
Yes. Yeah, but it goes to the fact that, you know, that the evidence is eyewitness important. I quote it all the time. You don't have to look behind you, but it says the eyes and ears are poor witnesses when the soul is barbarous. And I want to show that with respect to the other two witnesses. So basically, they relied on three witnesses. Here's the first one, and she can't identify them. So who were the next two? The next two were Chris Evans. He testified at trial, and he identified my client. And he early had said the shooter had a gray hoodie and blue jeans. But, you know, our defendant's theory was that it was this DeAndre Hines. Well, DeAndre Hines is this guy's bro, his homie. I mean, they were smoking weed together. They were drinking together. Evans took him to the apartment, you know, and they were there. He says they were. We are there every day.
Did that evidence come out at trial?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so the jury heard that.
Yeah. Well, I think some of, yeah, I'm talking just from the record.
From the jury trial.
Yes, I didn't try the case.
Right.
I had enough time. It took me forever to get through 70 volumes. So I apologize if there's something that I say that is different from your recollection. But basically, these are the things that got at me. This is the guy that identified my client. Now, he was there. You think he's going to blame it on his bro, on his homie? You know, that's what I say. I'm a witness when the soul is barbarous. I mean, you know, these kids, they don't think nothing of the truth. You know, they run around, you know, together at 16, 17, 18-year-olds. You know, I think some of them were in gangs. But so that's the second witness. So what we're saying is that the reliability of his testimony, the reliability of his credibility in terms of identification is important. These are borderline. So who's the third one? Now, that's KK. I'm not going to give her whole name, but she ID'd my client in the courtroom. And what the issue here is the credibility of her identification, the credibility of her testimony. Yeah, but what's interesting is that in this case, this is the lady who in court comes in and says my client did it. Now, she's also a good friend of DeAndre Hines. I mean, she invited him to the party. They're very, very good friends, and the record discloses that. But what happens is, even though she identified my client in court, what happened is that prior to this, the police talked to her. She was shown a Facebook photo of another person. And she says this, she identified this other person as the shooter. And basically, when she was shown this actual Facebook responses to the photos to the police, here's what happened in court. Riley asked her a question, and basically when you were shown this picture, you said, that is him. O-M-O-M-V-G. What does that mean? Answer, oh my fucking God. Question, okay, that is him, FFR, what does that mean? For real. Now, and then she says, and question, and you say, I'm sure that's him? Answer, yes. Question, I put that on my dead baby? That's him? Did you say that? Yes. So here's our third witness. So, you know, here she identifies somebody else on her dead baby's grave or whatever and says that's him. Now, so identification is key in this case.
So how do the exhibits help?
The exhibit that we're talking about are photos. And what they really are the photos of DeAndre Hines. And DeAndre Hines wearing a gray sweatshirt, blue jeans with dreads. Some of the testimonies said they had dreads. And he had a gun. And this is the guy who shortly after was arrested by the police. Okay, he was arrested by the cops. He was fleeing to Chicago. This is the day of the shooting. He was going to catch a bus to Chicago, but they stopped him. And he was wearing a plain gray sweatshirt with a hoodie. No insignias or no letters, and hair was in dreads. And, you know, in that case, you should have offered I would have offered a flight instruction. You know, they don't just apply to defendants. You know, I mean, that's evidence of guilt. There's a flight instruction in this case. In this case, there were two photos. The judge says, well, maybe one of them had gang signs. I dispute that. You can look at the photos. But one didn't. And it showed him wearing those same clothes with a handgun. The handgun was described as a small black handgun. In this case, he had a gun. And this is the... In that photo, it at the time he was arrested, at the time the photo was taken a couple of days before the shooting, he was dressed exactly the same clothes that everybody described him. Not just three witnesses, because there were other witnesses there to describe the shooter just in terms of what he was wearing.
So what the handgun wasn't just black, though, was it? Wasn't it black and silver in the picture?
I can't remember, but it doesn't make any difference, really. The witnesses say, yes, you had a small handgun, one say it was black, and whatever, but so what? I mean, he had a gun, and the witnesses that say it was silver, or black may have been right or wrong, but it's a gun.
Is it a relevant gun?
Excuse me?
Is it a relevant gun?
Well, it's relevant when you say that it's in the hands of the person you say that was the shooter. That's a small gun that was used in the shooting. I mean, that's, as Judge Duke Shatch used to say, you know, it's relevant, and I'll let it in for what it's worth. That's up to the jury to decide. And, you know, it interferes with my client's theory of the defense. What happened is they had a QT convenience store video, and it showed my client going in. And, yeah, he had a gray sweatshirt, but he had a big logo for Adidas on it, in large letters that said Adidas on the back. Now, one of these witnesses that testified earlier or provided information to the police said that that was that the shooter had this kind of lettering or logos. I mean, how do you miss that? And so, you know, in this case where you got misidentifications or prior identifications, this is really crucial. It comes down.
Was there another photo or photos in evidence that actually showed Hines with a sweatshirt, the same kind of description you're talking about?
There were two photos they offered. The judge didn't let it in. And that's what I'm saying is the error. And it wasn't harmless.
Was there another photo or photos beyond this?
Not that I recall. I mean, I think that I don't know if anybody ever showed a photo lineup with DeAndre Hines in it. But the issue is, you know, I don't know what happened outside the courtroom with respect to other conversations in terms of, but I know that none of the witnesses were shown a photo lineup of DeAndre Hines. And
what do you understand was the trial court's rationale for excluding 292 and 293?
I don't know. I mean, she said one of them contained gang signs, but, you know, that, to me, that's, that's error, and it's not harmless error because she didn't meet the burden in terms of when you...
But the technical ruling is it's excluded under 403 prejudicial.
Yes.
And then the judge says it's prejudicial because...
No,
or
she
do
didn't
we
say.
Or do we understand... Or it was prejudicial because the gun's got the features that arguably are relevant.
That's the mystery here. She didn't say why it was unfairly prejudicial or how. And it's up to the state to make that showing. Rule 403 says, although relevant evidence may be excluded if its probative value is substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice, confusion of the issues or misleading the jury, or by consideration of undue delay. Well, it wasn't any of those things. You know, she says that she just, and how was it unprejudicial? It's difficult to determine there was unfair prejudice that she was referring to, since the state made no arguments or showing that it was going to be unfairly prejudicial. Or how? You know, as this court has often said, all evidence offered by one party is necessarily prejudicial to the other party. What the court didn't do here, they overlooked, was the offer of photos were made in support of the defendant's primary defense, and he wasn't the shooter. The photos of Hines wearing that gray hoodie, dreads in his hair, and holding the same type of handgun was evidence tending to show that the eyewitnesses were actually identifying Hines as a shooter. been mistakenly believing he was the defendant. Or maybe not mistakenly, just trying to protect their bro or their friend. And that's key here. The evidence wasn't cumulative to any other evidence offered by the party. It certainly wasn't misleading or creating confusion, since it was offered in support of the defendant's defense that he's asserted throughout.
And consistent with the defendant's defense, which defense was internally consistent. I'm not the shooter.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not the shooter. This other guy is. I mean, DeAndre was there. He had the same description of the individual who was supposedly did the shooting. There was other witnesses DeAsia, the first one they talked to, identified a 5'6", 5'7", blue jeans, gray sweatshirt. None of them mentioned Adidas, but, she provided the description of what was there. But what's important is that the improper exclusion of the evidence offered by the defendant in this case, I think, requires reversal. I mean, the rule of law here...
And are we talking about abuse of discretion?
Yeah, because that means it's an abuse of discretion if you don't let in evidence and it's not harmless. The state has the burden to show it's not harmless, and the court has to show it's not harmless either. It's the rule of law is that if there's an erroneous evidentiary ruling and it results in prejudice to the defendant, unless the state demonstrates that the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. So, to go back to that initial proposition of law in terms of those cases, we talk about it says in a jury trial of a criminal case, which this was, whether error in admitting or excluding evidence reaches a constitutional dimension or not, an erroneous evidentiary ruling results in prejudice to the defendant unless the state demonstrates that the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, there wasn't any evidence. The state didn't even put on any evidence or any showing. No argument even. The judge just ruled. And, I think that was wrong. Not only was the state unable to show that the admission of the photos was unfairly prejudiced, the exclusion of that evidence was presumptively prejudicial to the defendant. And this is the type of error that warrants reversal of the convictions, unless the record shows that the state proved the ruling was harmless. How could that be harmless? When there's evidence there that tends to support the theory that it was DeAndre Evans, and these other two people are protecting him. And here he is in the same clothes that meets the description, carrying a gun. The same guy, whether it's black, green, or whatever it is. I think the fact is it was a small caliber gun. And when somebody says it's black, doesn't mean it can't come in.
Mr. Davis, you're telling us that there's a not a separate photograph. I think there's indication in the record that there is another photograph of Mr. Hines with the same clothes on. The only difference being there's no gun, is my understanding. And so, if that's the case, how does that change the analysis?
I don't know that it does.
The photo, I think Judge Arbor is referring to the photo of January 4th. The day after.
You lost me because I know I'm not sure how that would affect this.
Well, to me, the only difference is that one picture has him wearing the same clothing with the gun and one without the gun. And so if the picture came in with the gun or without the gun, then the analysis comes down to whether that gun was 403 prejudicial.
Yeah, prejudicial to the one out. It should go in there for the jury to decide, or it didn't decide the weight of the evidence. But I've got a minute here, too. Then I would like to suggest, once again, that you apply for that FTC that it's going to go to this court. It's your listeners, but thank you.
Thank you very much.
to assign this error, but I would refer to assignment as no merit for the reasons I stated in my brief, so unless the court has questions, I will move on to the second assignment. I would like to tag this sentence, violates the Eighth Amendment.
Well, how about if you concentrate on that? Let me first assign it, which is what Mr. Davis concentrated on. Can you help us with that error?
Sure, I think the state, actually, I disagree with the state. Basis for some catch. First of all, it's not relevant. I have no idea whether that gun's real, what caliber it is. And the court said, well, it doesn't meet the description. I mean, there were two witnesses that described the gun. They said it was a black handgun. The gun that is depicted in those photos is clearly mostly silver with black. So there's no, with a little bit of black, there's no relationship between that gun and the gun that was used in the homicide. I mean, I don't even know whether it was capable of firing kinds of bullets. So
would they be under 403 if it wasn't relevant?
Well, I think they excluded on the ground that it was irrelevant. I think, because I don't, frankly, I don't quite understand what the district court's ruling was there. Ultimately, I mean, I think she was right when she was saying, but she can't just point out, look, it doesn't match the description. So I
think it's irrelevant, isn't it?
Right, it is relevant. But to the extent it was relevant, I think the point that the state was trying to make was it's only relevant on the issue of capacity. So it's basically the first four type argument, and we think it's unfairly prejudicial.
The state, how do you understand the stated basis for excluding 292 and 293?
I think she said it's unfair prejudice. That's my understanding. She said whatever marginal probative value there is, these photos is substantially outweighed by the evidence of unfair.
And what was the prejudice?
Well, the prejudice is that it tends to suggest decision on an improper basis. I mean, really, it's a very fair thread on which to suggest that he committed that homicide. Like, okay, well, what, he had a gun that doesn't even match the description of the gun that was used in the shooting a couple of days before. So the only inference that you can really draw is, well, he had the gun the same day of the murders, and he must have been, because he had that gun, then he must have been the shooter. I mean, that's terrible. There's no way that should be submitted to a jury. There has to be some connection that we can showing that that gun may have been used to commit these homicides. There was nothing. There was absolutely no connection.
The looking in context and following up on Judge Arbor's line, how does all of this fit together in terms of the quantum of evidence if there's another photo from the day after with the individual who our defendant says is the shooter that came in, but this 292 and 293 didn't?
Right, that didn't come in, and I think that goes to this point about the credibility of the description of the shooter in the gray sweatshirt. He wasn't wearing a hoodie.
Is it also cumulative?
Yes, I believe the photo was cumulative, because the issue is, well, gee, he was wearing the same type of clothing. That evidence is already in. The question here is more narrow, which is there any reason to admit this photo showing him holding a gun a few days before the homicide? But its sole purpose is just to suggest that he may have done it, but there's no relationship between that gun and the homicide in the case. I don't see any relevance, and I think it is unfairly prejudicial. For that reason, and the reason that it appears to suggest a decision on an improper basis, because all it goes to is propensity. I can see no other conceivable reason to it.
Propensity, the expression propensity, ordinarily in 404, refers to a defendant.
Right, but I'm saying
that so the gentleman in the photo is not our defendant.
No, he's not.
So what is propensity of the non-defendant? How does that fit into your argument?
Well, that's all I'm saying is that I think it's what they usually term first 404. There's some discussion of that kind of evidence in Alvarado-Quintino, where you're trying to prove to someone, like third party, a part of the defense, the third party committed this crime, and that evidence is relevant. They're proper of that act to show that that was the proper person crime. So I think, that's essentially the same thing that's going on here. They're angry at the control. Actually, you have to show something. You have to show something. Actually, firearm that was pictured there. And this homicide or report seems to be relevant at all.
So at the end of the day, the state's position is the exclusion of 292 and 293 was proper because it wasn't relevant.
Because it wasn't relevant, and it's unfairly prejudicial. I'm going either one of those routes, and I don't agree with the remarks stated. I think we're basically finding what judges are reading by the state, and finding that it was unfairly prejudicial.
So you have a case here of judge doing, coming to right conclusions with a wrong
Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day then.